From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening, good morning, good afternoon, wherever you may be across the planet. All these different time zones covered like a blanket by this program, Coast to Coast AM. I'm Art Bell. It is my honor and my privilege to be escorting you through this half of the weekend. Actually, I had planned to escort you through yesterday. However, we really, my poor wife, what a greeting she has had to the United States. It's absolutely amazing what's going on. Actually, do you hear that noise? That's amazing, too. I have no idea what that noise is. But it's not good. It seems to be resonating with my voice, too. How unusual is that? I've got a noise that's actually resonating with my voice. Every time I talk, it goes berserk. That is really strange. What in the world could that be? I'll tell you what. Let's take a break and see if we can solve this during the break, and we'll be right back. It seems to be the night of gremlins, folks. This is an actual physical noise that I've got here. Let me tell you what happened yesterday before I go into what's happening tonight. Yesterday in Pahrump at 3 a.m., the power went out across the entire valley. A 320-kilovolt power line. This noise is resonating with my voice, guys. A 320-kilovolt line that comes from Las Vegas and feeds Pahrump went down. The line actually hit the ground, and so the entire Pahrump Valley lost power. Now, we didn't retrieve power for about 17 hours, maybe 18 hours. And this going on at a time when, well, for example, the temperature outside right now is about 16 degrees here in Pahrump. And this noise is incredible. And that's what I am using, guys. They're telling me to use a new headset. That's actually what I am using. This noise is a physical noise coming from one of the Zephyrs or one of the, you know, I believe it's a Zephyr, just for the record. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, to finish this up, because I may not get much more in, that stopped me from doing the program. The temperature went down to 9 degrees last night and the night before. And so I spent the entire day on an emergency transmitter, because KNYE was off the air, trying to relay information to the people of Pahrump here, who were beside themselves with no power and temperatures that never got above freezing, even during the day. So, what a welcome. Beyond that, we've got, I had a picture of my house up that was taken by Google, by satellite. Let's see, what other news was I going to give you? My kitty cats will be here on the 18th. And this noise is just unbelievable. And it appears to be going on no matter what. Gentlemen, I'll tell you what we're going to do. Obviously, we can't conduct a program this way, so we're going to figure this out, and we're going to go to a replay for just a very few minutes, I hope, and I'm going to try and figure out what in the world is causing such a noise, and then we're going to come back live, if at all possible. So, with that note, I know you guys are always running a backup. Go ahead and run the backup, and everybody hang loose. We'll try and come back live in a few moments. Well, all right, ladies and gentlemen, I believe we are back. And I guess we have solved whatever it was. We have a unit here called a Zephyr. Now, Zephyr is something that allows communication between here and Florida. And the top Zephyr just went totally berserk. So during that brief hiatus, I reached back, yanked the power cord out, gave it a good wrap, and put the power cord back on. And as you can hear, it's now reasonably quiet. So, as I was telling you, the valley has gone through, I mean, we're getting a giant freeze here, just an incredible deep freeze, going down to about 9 degrees. When does it ever do that here? Poor Aaron, poor me. My body now is used to temperatures in the mid-80s, high 100% humidity, and you get here and the wind is howling, and now it's going down to 9 degrees. Global what? Looking briefly at the news, Saddam Hussein's half-brother and the former head of Iraq's Revolutionary Court were both hanged before dawn Monday. The prosecutor said 2 weeks and 2 days after the former Iraq dictator was executed in a very chaotic scene that has drawn worldwide criticism. Barzan Ibrahim, Saddam's half-brother and former intelligence chief, and Awad Hamad al-Bandar, that would be the head of Iraq's Revolutionary Court, have been found guilty along with Saddam in the killing of 148 Shiite Muslims after a 1982 assassination attempt on the former leader in a town north of Baghdad. So they're gone now. Digging in for confrontation, our president and vice president say they will not budge from sending more U.S. troops to Iraq, no matter how much Congress opposes it. Quote, "I fully understand they could try to stop me," Bush said of the Democrat-run Congress, "but I've made my decision and we are going forward." The ice storms that have been blamed for at least 21 deaths now, so it's not just our weather, continue to lash much of the nation Sunday as crews tried to restore power to hundreds of thousands, and slick roads spawned accidents. Waves of freezing rain, sleet, and snow on Friday caused at least 12 deaths in Oklahoma, 6 in Missouri, 2 in Texas, 1 in New York. O.J. Simpson saying a chapter from his unpublished book that hypothesizes how he might have killed his ex-wife and friend was created mostly from a ghostwriter's mind. Well, I saw this game earlier. Tom Brady, it says here, cool as ever, delivered every time the San Diego Chargers gave him another chance. Too damn many chances. Already a 3-time Super Bowl winner. He's shot at a fourth, now is very much alive after the New England Patriots shocked league MVP LaDainian Thompson and the Chargers on Sunday. I don't want to read any more of this. I saw the game. Chargers blew it. Damn it. Do you know how close they've been? How many times? This was going to be the year of the Chargers, and they blew it. A camper who became stranded nearly 5 weeks ago in a national forest because she could not cross a swollen river was rescued Sunday, more than 2 weeks after the search for her was called off. A New Mexico National Guard crew waded across the icy Gila River to rescue a dehydrated and weak Carolyn Dorn of South Carolina, who entered the Gila National Forest alone back on December 6th for a 2-week camping trip. For more than 4 years, Sean Hornbeck seemed to have had every chance to escape, left alone for hours to ride his bike, play video games, and walk past missing child posters showing his own progressed image. But mental health experts say this troubling case is hardly so simple, and that Hornbeck was likely kept mentally shackled by terror and domination from the man accused of kidnapping him, 41-year-old Michael Devlin. Glenn and Rebecca Markham are a bit taken back by the worldwide publicity surrounding their child scheduled to arrive by C-section on Tuesday. News outlets as far away as Singapore simply are enthralled with the story of officers using flat-bottom boats to rescue the child's frozen embryo from a sweltering hospital in the chaotic aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Makers of the tropical island drama Lost, are you a Lost fan? Say they're talking with ABC executives about setting an end date for the series. But there's no sense in the finale coming anytime soon. They're knowing they have a deadline helps the writers, apparently. This convoluted drama, it is convoluted too. lay out how they want the story to end. Producer said Sonny in a meeting with TV critics. How about Found? Wouldn't a good Lost final episode simply be Found? Not going to leave them lost on the island, are you? I suppose they could be converts, and the rescue ship could come, and they all could decide that they love it there and not even signal the ship. That'd make a good final episode. Going to stay in the wilderness. Thousands of birds have fallen from the skies over Esperance, and nobody knows why. All the residents of flood-devastated Esperance know that their dawn chorus of singing birds is simply gone. The main casualties are wattle birds, yellow-throated miners, New Holland honey eaters, and singing honey eaters, though some dead crows, hawks, and pigeons also have been found. Wildlife officers are simply baffled by the catastrophic event, which the Department of Environment and Conservation said began well before last week's freak storm. On Monday in Australia, Esperance, 725 kilometers southeast of Perth, was actually declared a natural disaster zone. District Natural Conservation Coordinator Mike Fitzgerald said, first reports of the birds dropping dead in people's yards came 3 weeks ago. More than 500 deaths have since been notified, but the call suddenly stopped last week. Reportedly because there simply were no birds left. It's very substantial, Mr. Fitzgerald said. We estimate several thousand birds are dead, though we don't have a clear number because of the large areas of bushland. Birds Australia, the nation's main conservation group, said it had not heard of a similar occurrence, not anywhere near that scale, and all at the very same time, and also the fact that it's several different species. You'd have to call that a most unusual event and one that we all have to be concerned about. And he really meant that. All of us have to be concerned about it. And we do. Anytime you hear about animals, particularly birds, simply dropping dead, you want to worry a little bit. A group of researchers working at the Human Genome Project, this is a great story, indicate they made an astonishing scientific discovery. You may have heard about this. They believe so-called 97% non-coding sequences in human DNA is no less than genetic code, brace yourself, of extraterrestrial life forms. The non-coding sequences are common to all living organisms on Earth, from molds to fish to humans. In human DNA, they constitute a larger part of the total genome, according to Professor Chang and group leader. Non-coding sequences, originally known as junk DNA, you've heard about that, right? We've talked about it here on the show, junk DNA, were discovered years ago, and their function remained a mystery. The overwhelming majority of human DNA is off-world, that's right, off-world in origin. The apparent extraterrestrial junk genes merely enjoy the ride with hard-working active genes passed on from human generation to generation. After comprehensive analysis, with the assistance of other scientists, computer programmers, mathematicians, and other learned scholars, Professor Chang had wondered if the apparently junk human DNA might be created by some kind of extraterrestrial programmer. The alien chunks within human DNA, according to Professor Chang, have its own veins, arteries, and its own immune system that vigorously resists all our anti-cancer drugs. Professor Chang further stipulates that our hypothesis is that a higher extraterrestrial life form was engaged in creating new life, then planting it on various planets. Earth is just one of them. Perhaps after programming, our creators grow us the same way we grow bacteria in petri dishes. We can't know their motives, whether it was a scientific experiment of some sort, or perhaps a way of preparing new planets for colonization, or a long-time ongoing business of seeding life in the universe. Wow. Professor Chang further indicates that, quote, if we think about it in our human terms, the apparent extraterrestrial programmers were most probably working on one big code consisting of several projects, and the projects should have produced various life forms for various planets. They've also been trying various solutions. They wrote, this is in quotes, the big code executed it, didn't like some function, changed them or added new ones, executed again, made more improvements, tried again and again. That sounds just like programmers, doesn't it? A lot of you out there do computer programming, and that's exactly the way you do it. You change, sometimes you compile, then you execute, and you go, no, I want to fix this, and then you execute, you change and execute again, right? The apparent extraterrestrial programmers may have been ordered to cut all their idealistic plans for the future when they concentrated on the, in quotes again, Earth project to meet the pressing deadline. Very likely in an apparent rush, the extraterrestrial programmers may have cut down drastically on big code and delivered basic program intended for Earth. Professor Chang is one of only many scientists and other researchers who have discovered extraterrestrial origins to humanity in the Human Genome Project. Professor Chang and his research colleagues show that apparent extraterrestrial programming gaps in DNA sequencing precipitated by a hypothesized rush to create human life on Earth presented humankind with an illogical growth of mass cells that we now know and hate called cancer. So that is about as fascinating as it gets in my mind, if true. There are preliminary reports of a possible huge explosion somewhere in the Iranian desert. Now, this is a couple of days old, and it may have been solved by now. Last week, there was a reported dramatic UFO incident in South Africa involving an apparent meteor crash with a very unusual sound associated with it. Now another crash has taken place, this time in Iran. Authorities do not believe the object that crashed was an aircraft. More for you when we get it. That was from Whitley Strieber's Unknown Country. From the high desert and the great American Southwest, that's right, back in the good old USA, I'm Art Bell. Open lines right ahead. Yes, here I am, and I had told you about what happened to the Kingdom of Nye. It lost all power. I mean, we get our power from Las Vegas, from that side. And the big, great, big 230-kilovolt lines that came across, one of them hit the ground. What I didn't tell you, because I had that noise going on, was that while I was trying to calm down and sort of just talk to the people of Pahrump, I spent all day on an emergency transmitter talking to the people of Pahrump. And, you know, there were a lot of older people on machines that keep them alive that were very concerned, as you might imagine. A number of pets passed away, that kind of thing. It was really bad, really, really bad, extremely cold. And we all thought, well, the cold brought the lines down. Wrong. When our electric cooperative got up to the very remote location on the mountain headed toward Las Vegas where this line was down, they found a number of shell casings on the ground. Now, that leads one to the conclusion that somebody went out there with a high-powered rifle and shot those lines down. Now, we don't, of course, know that absolutely, but they found the shell casings directly below. In fact, they had to build a road to get to these lines, and that's why it took all of 18 hours or whatever it took. These are not the little lines. These are the big ones that you see going out across country, you know, the monsters. And it's one of those that came down, and there were shell casings right below the area, the suspected area of wrongdoing. And I called it terrorism, and to me it is an act of terrorism. When you take out a whole valley in temperatures like these, when you're down 9-10 degrees in that area, you're doing something that's life-threatening to thousands of people. And that, of course, is what kept me off the air. So that you might know, that's what occurred. And again, Our cats got delayed due to a booster shot. Abby Dose needed a booster shot, but they will be here on the 18th. So we have only but 4 days to wait, and we'll have the furred ones, including our adoptee from the Philippines, here with us. That will be wonderful. In a moment, open lines. In addition, one more note, as a result of the power failure and several bumps, there were televisions, computers, and high-tech appliances of all kinds lost out across the valley. I lost one computer. Whether I'll get it back, revive it or not is another question. But all across the valley, because of the extent of the power failure, a lot of people lost a lot of high-tech stuff. That said, off we go to the lines west of the Rockies. Chris in North Dakota, you're on the air.
How are you doing, Mr. Bell?
I'm doing well, Chris.
It's 26 below zero here, and
Oh my God. Oh, my God. 26 below zero?
And I'm trucking right through it, but I have an important question about one of my favorite historical figures to ask you.
Fire away.
Okay. When you were in the Philippines, did you happen to see any kind of memorials or statues to General MacArthur? And the second part of the question is, did...
Let me answer the first part, all right?
Okay.
When I was in the Philippines, I visited Corregidor. And at one point in Corregidor, there is a statue of MacArthur with the I Shall Return logo at the bottom.
That's great. That is so awesome. Does people like your wife, when they were kids in school, was he a figure that they learned about?
Of course.
Well, that's great. Well, I'm so excited I got the chance to talk to you. So thank you very much and have a great night. Stay warm.
You're very welcome. Thank you. Yes, all of you stay warm. What's happening is somewhat unprecedented. We generally, here in this part of the Southwest, we go up, you know, we get 65, 75 degrees is not unheard of in the winter months. And that's why we're flooded with snowbirds. But the snowbirds that have come down recently have been greeted by what they left. As I mentioned, it is at the moment 16 degrees out there. 16 degrees! Wildcard line, Fred in Michigan, you're on the air.
Hey, Art. Well, you should be here in balmy Michigan where it's 32 and freezing rain.
It's 32 degrees there?
Honest, freezing rain. And I don't know what the forecast is. They're only 40% accurate anyway, but... Hey, Art, a few weeks ago you mentioned that you were going to resolve your smoking habit with a pharmaceutical.
Yeah, I'm definitely thinking about it. I forget what it's called. I've got it over here. And I'm going to the doctor tomorrow morning or tomorrow afternoon, I guess. So I will ask my doctor about it then.
Let me put it in perspective for you.
Yes.
The GAO, last year or the year before, issued a report that the third leading cause of death in this country is pharmaceuticals. And last I heard, there was a report in JAMA a number of years ago that with only the documented cases, only the reported documented cases, there was 110,000 deaths American in hospitals due to pharmaceutical drugs properly administered and prescribed.
Yeah.
Now, what I want you to know is starting in high school, when I had two fractured vertebrae in my neck from the silly game of football, I don't know if they still do these stupid head-on contact drills where the backs go one-on-two against the linemen. Well, that's how the vertebrae were fractured. Well, funny thing, I got into pipe smoking, and I found some tobacco that everywhere I went and smoked, everyone around me would tell me how great it smelled, it tasted great, it made me feel great, but guess what? I could smoke nonstop 6 hours a day, and I was doing that every chance I got. Mm-hmm. This went on for about 18 years until I finally realized it was having an adverse effect on my health, even though I loved it. And so I did a little research, found an article in Omni magazine, January 83, Omni.
Yes.
And it profiled a lady medical doctor, Margaret Patterson from Scotland.
Okay, you've got to make this quick now.
Pardon me?
I say you've got to make it quick.
Okay, long story short, she discovered in using electroacupuncture and on follow-ups with her addict patients that the electroacupuncture caused the addiction to totally disappear within a couple weeks.
Okay, well, okay, thank you. I've had that advice from many, that acupuncture, and it probably works. I think, personally, that a lot of it is what you think will work. If you believe something will work, then it works. That's, of course, the placebo effect. And that's why you get so many different pieces of advice from different people. There is this new drug that's supposed to help. Now, as you know, I've cut my smoking down to about 4 cigarettes a day, except when I'm on the air. Then I slip. And when the power went out, I slipped under stress, severe stress. When the power dumped here in the valley and everybody was freezing and we were trying to, you know, see what equipment had died, and it was just a rat race. I smoked. I caved and I smoked. So under severe stress or on the radio, and this is not stress for me, it's fun, but it's connected to smoking. Now, going back to the very first thing you said in the conversation regarding weather forecasts, I don't think they're forecasts so much as they are observations. Now, they may get paid a lot of money to make these forecasts, so-called, but they really seem more like observations. In other words, look outside and see what it's doing. Yes, we forecast that it would be clear, but damn, look, it's raining. We better change it and say rain, because that's what it's doing. First-time caller line, JC, not the JC, I understand, but JC nevertheless in Arizona, you're on the air.
Yes, Mr. Bell.
Mm-hmm.
Well, about 3 weeks ago, I was recruited by JC as one of his lieutenants, his disciple.
Well, he needs help. You know, ever since Edna has left, he needs help.
Well, right now, currently, he's trying to ask people in the IRS to find out where she is. And I don't want to be part of that. Me personally, I'd like to say on the air that I'd like to quit his organization because his obsession of you and Mr. Norrie is doggone pathetic. I remember listening to the show before I was recruited. I mean, one of the very first things that he does is making me change my last name.
Might I know how you met the infamous JC?
Over the internet.
Over the internet. Figures.
He sent over some documents and everything saying that this is the way it is, blah, blah, blah.
Well, you must have asked then to be recruited.
He actually has cue cards.
Cue cards, no doubt. He must have. Did you ask to be recruited?
No, he kept bugging me on my email somehow.
Oh, come on now. He couldn't have got your email from, you know, nowhere. You must have given it to him.
I'm assuming so. Maybe I wanted to be recruited.
I see.
But you know what, Mr. Bell? You guys and Mr. Norrie, you're not the devil. If anyone who's the devil around here
is JC.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if he had any guts, he'd call himself. He wouldn't send his failed lieutenants. All right. Buffalo, New York. It's usually really cold there. The Gator, he calls himself, in Buffalo. Hello.
Hi, Art. How are you, buddy?
I'm all right.
Welcome back to the United States. I'm calling you from Buffalo, WBEN, 930 AM.
Yes, sir.
And we're waiting for an ice storm tonight. We're supposed to get half an inch of ice.
So really? A nice storm. Lovely.
Yeah, we're gonna lose power. You should have saw the storm here on October 13th. I spent a lot of time in the woods, and the forest was really destroyed. About one out of every three trees were toppled over. It was sad.
Well, anybody who travels to or goes to Buffalo, New York, has got to know they're probably going to get cold and snowed upon, and probably chunks of ice will fall on them.
This is the warmest winter I've ever seen up here. The reason why I'm calling you is that I've seen three Bigfoots in 42 years. It will see you before you'll see it. And my question to you is, what's going on in the world of Bigfoot?
I have no idea. I have not had a Bigfoot guest in a long time, nor have I heard of a Bigfoot sighting in a long time. Closest thing was down in Florida, and they weren't really big feet, as it were.
They call them the skunk ape.
That's right.
The smell is indescribable. And you have that one howl that you play. That is the real McCoy. I have heard that, Art. That's genuine.
Yeah, it is a real thing.
All right, buddy. Have a good evening.
Yeah, you have a good evening, too.
Thank you.
And take care. I wonder, I'll have to work on that. I can probably get those sounds on the air. I still have them here. In fact, they spent the 8 months that I was in the Philippines here. Wildcard line one, Mike in Kentucky, you're on the air.
Yes, Art. Welcome back.
Thank you.
A few months back, I heard something about an explosion on the moon, and I was wondering if you could maybe elaborate a little bit on that.
Not at all. I hadn't heard about it.
What kind
of explosion?
Some type of small explosion on the moon, and I heard it over the radio, and I'm 100% sure I heard it, and I'm thinking maybe it was possibly one of the batteries or something from one of the rovers on the one of the vehicles on the moon, you know, shorted out.
Well, the rovers are on Mars. It's possible that something hit the moon. After all, the moon is cratered, and that comes from a long history of things having hit it. All right, to David in San Diego. How are you feeling down there, David?
Oh, it's brutally cold. It's 45 degrees.
No, I wasn't talking so much about the weather, although 45 is terribly cold for San Diego. I was talking more about the game.
Oh, try not to think about that.
Yeah.
But anyways, the reason I was calling, in reference to the extraterrestrial origin of our DNA, it is absolutely true. The Earth is one of many, many planets that have been seeded in order to have, we're on prison rehabilitation planets. Okay, we are actually in a race of beings that are non-physical, and we are being kept on these planets in order to rehab ourselves so we can rejoin our trillions of fellow beings in the ether, what they call the ether.
So and, we're kind of like the galaxy version of Australia.
Exactly. And that's, if you take any part of society and correlate it with a prison society, you'll find that the people that are in charge of our countries are the same as the prison gang bosses in prison. And the wardens are the angels and such. And I don't know who God or what God is, so I could tell you that.
Okay, well, I'm not positive either. But, you know, this story about the so-called junk DNA being left over by the programmers who programmed us, and that the possibility that we were not the finished product, but only sort of a midterm experiment. Well, that's a little depressing when you think about it, that there were some extraterrestrials programming DNA, programming life. That's what life is. It's the end result of DNA, right? And that they hadn't quite finished or hadn't quite perfected us. It's kind of like a carpenter's house, you know, it's never done. And I suppose a programmer is never really quite done. So they never got quite done with us, but we were an executed file anyway, and so here we are. Let's go to Joe in Delaware. Hi, Joe.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
There are numerous predictions in the Bible codes about great calamities in the years 2010 and 2012, and mm-hmm. I just wanted to see if you had talked to anybody about this or had an opinion on it. Do you think there's something to it?
Well, I would say that the Mayans, everybody really looks more to Mayans as far as 2012 is concerned. I'm not sure what the Bible says about that time span, but the Mayans certainly stopped making calendars. Maybe they got fed up with making calendars. Maybe they just got sick and said, look, no one's ever going to get to 2012 anyway, so the hell with it. I'm not making any more calendars. Or it might mean the end of all things, the virtual end of time, and we won't know until 2012. That's all I know. West of the Rockies, Tiffany, you're on the air in Utah.
Hi, Art. How are you?
Very well.
Good. Hey, my question, and I don't know if it kind of sounds stupid, but I've been seeing a lot of, like, the Ready.gov ads with, like, Bill Clinton and President Bush, and they don't tell you what you're supposed to be getting ready for. But not only that, I see it all around me, like, preparedness things, like 24-hour kits. All the churches in my area have these signs up saying, like, be a survivor or learn, come here on Sunday to learn how to survive. And then the weirdest thing is my 12-year-old daughter tells me the other night that she had a dream that the world ended. And I didn't tell her that all the other signs I'd been seeing, but it's just one more thing. I'm like, oh, my gosh, what is going on? I just feel like an impending, something impending that maybe we're just being kind of conditioned to prepare for, but not really told what we're preparing for.
Well, you began the conversation by saying ads with our president and President Clinton. Is that correct?
Yeah. Well, no, George Bush Sr., current Bush president, but yeah, Bill Clinton and Bush Sr., and they do these ads, and they're just, that says prepare, get, make sure your family's prepared, and they tell you to go to a website called ready.gov.
Have you been there?
No. I don't have the internet at my house, so I haven't been able to get on it. But it's just, they don't tell you what they're wanting you to prepare for. It leaves you kind of hanging, you know, with, and it's like a public service announcement by them. And I've
and you feel as though it's something catastrophic?
I feel that way. Maybe it's the other signs that I see in addition to just that. But it, when you have two, like, people.
All right. You know what? I'm on that website right now. It's ready. There's a little check mark there, and it says prepare, plan, stay informed. Then it says important news update. New resolve to be ready in 2007, banners for downloading. Ready, learn how you and your family can be prepared for emergencies. www.ready.gov, you're right.
It don't really tell you too much, or it's
no, it does not.
Tell you to be ready.
All right, well, listen, Tiffany.
It kind of scares me, I guess.
Get ready, all right?
I think that's my plan. For whatever is coming, I'll get ready.
All right, Tiff, I've got a guest coming, so I've got to get ready myself. That's what it says. That's about the totality of ready.gov. I've got to do more investigation. All right, coming up, investigation we shall do with Ed and Chris Sherwood. It's all about crop circles. I'm Art Bell. Here I am. Ed and Chris Sherwood are internationally known crop circle researchers with more than 30 years together studying, experiencing the worldwide crop circle phenomena. Ed began crop circle research in 1984 and on-site field work back in 1990. Chris, on the other hand, began crop circle research in 1991. Ed and Chris co-founded Millennium Research in January of 1996, a multimedia project created to document and share their combined research concerning crop circles and related phenomena. So, in a moment, Ed and Chris Sherwood. Ed and Chris Sherwood, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Art. How are you tonight?
Hello,
Art. Hi there.
Very good to be with you.
Good to have you both. We've got a little hum on the line. I guess we can live with it. Where are you two?
We are in Santa Monica, near Los Angeles.
Okay. And Santa Monica actually is the exact area where you have been seeing, and more importantly, perhaps, from a proof point of view, videotaping UFO encounters. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
We have videotaped more than 40 daylight UFO sightings above our apartment and immediate neighborhood since June of last year.
Okay, that's a very, very populated area. So one would expect to see newspaper headlines about this sort of thing, or are they just barely visible to the naked eye?
Not at all barely visible. These are very visible objects, although perhaps half of them are just above where most people would look up. If they're walking down the street, you know.
Yeah, they're quite high up. You'd have to really be, you know, looking to the sky to spot a lot of the ones that we've seen.
A few thousand feet, perhaps, at the most. But, you know, most people going about their daily lives don't look up to see perhaps these things, at least at the heights we've been seeing them. But we have had some that have been very noticeable in the sky. If anyone was out looking up, they would not have missed it.
Hmm.
Including Well, now we've seen more than 8 different types of UFO.
That was my next question. What are you seeing?
Well, we're seeing all kinds of things. We have been witnessing spheres, for example, that appear almost on cue to certain things that we've been doing, holding stationary positions for up to 15 minutes. We've had a large white, opaque white worm-looking thing in the sky, or tubular object, very large. The one we filmed on the 9th, September 10th, looked more than 100 feet long. Imagine a large white maggot in the sky, scalloped-edged, round ball on each end, moving against the wind. And I filmed this for 30 minutes and filmed it clearly flying against the wind. You can see the palm trees all going in one direction, and this thing is going in the opposite direction. And after about 20 minutes of filming it, it dissolved down into a much smaller object, but with many bright spheres below it, which just popped on like stars in daytime. And then the whole lot flew away in formation, maintaining their formation at speed. So it was like, I'm calling this a UFO sphere container. We've now seen several of these, and they've been seen in Mexico, filmed as well, in Mexico and in further parts of the world. And oftentimes, they are seen in conjunction with multiple spheres. And we've now filmed the apparent process of a long, white, opaque object that you can't see through, becoming a UFO fleet, what is called a UFO fleet, and flying away. And we filmed this.
All right. It's hard to even know where to begin. Again, this is a very heavily populated, you know, it's a very heavily populated area, and there should be other eyewitnesses.
Well, there have been. We've had people email us photos of very similar objects in relatively similar area up to West L.A. and parts over toward the valley.
In fact,
Chatsworth.
The last time we were on Coast to Coast a few months ago, we actually mentioned this, and we received a very interesting email from a lady a few miles from us who witnessed the same object I just described. So there are definitely other witnesses. We haven't received, you know, lots of mail confirming lots and lots of witnesses, but there must be, because, as you said, this is a very populated area. In fact, it's the complete opposite to what I'm used to as a location for witnessing these type of events. And it's been very challenging to do these sky watches and to film these objects, simply because we're right in the middle of a very built-up area, and nothing is, it's seen by everybody. We've had lots of people pull up, including the police, and ask us, what are we doing? Amazing things have been happening.
All right. You have, in order to appear tonight on Coast, you've put up a number of photographs on the website, a whole bunch of them. In fact, I think you've got several pages of them, don't you?
That's right, 1 to 4. And I know that we won't have time necessarily to go through all of these, but they're up there for people to see. A lot of the things we will be talking about can be looked at. Give you an idea of what we are filming. Some of the stills, we're shot off our television. We don't have access to high-end equipment and studios to give you the best of the best that could be extracted from our images. But what we've put up is the best that we can obtain, and it gives you an idea of what we're seeing.
Okay, you're using high 8 video equipment, is that correct?
Yes. It's an old camera, but it's a very good one, we're told, by people who are expert with these cameras. It has a very good zoom. Some of these objects that we've filmed, even though they are close to us, i.e. Less than a quarter of a mile away, 1,000 or a few thousand feet up, some of the objects have been at the limit of our camera's ability to get them in detail. I think this is a symptom of ufology.
It is. And let me tell you, I've got a new video camera. Actually, I bought it about a year ago, so it's been out for a while now. It's a Sony high definition camera. And there is so much difference between high definition and standard video that for a ufologist, it's really, really worth the investment. It's a couple thousand dollars.
Yeah.
But for high definition, and it's real, the real McCoy, real high definition, I would sure recommend that to you as a dream to have.
Yeah, sure.
That is on our wish list, right at the top of the wish list.
Exactly. If there's any entrepreneurs out there that can afford that, we would love it, because we have mentioned this to a number of producers around us who have cameras or have just obtained them. And we've said, look, you know, we're getting all these sightings. We don't have the best of the best equipment. But so far, no one has really come forward, except we did have a very interesting offer from MUFON, who asked us if we'd be interested in fixing a permanent camera, a website camera, from our location, which I would love to say yes to, because there'd be nothing better than for everyone at home to log on, go on online, look at our view, participate in the meditations we've been doing that have preceded many of these sightings, and take part in the meditation at home, and then look at the view we're watching, and then see something.
All right, I want to ask you a little both about that meditation. Now, this goes right to the very core of what UFOs might or might not be. A number of groups, not just yours, but a number of groups, are using meditation to try and bring these objects into view. And it apparently works.
It works very much. In fact, I've done this a lot in England before I came here 10 years ago, and had tremendous results over and over. And in fact, because of this place being so built up and not seemingly ideal for this type of work, I haven't done much of that here. But there are many groups worldwide that have been doing this, some for many, many years.
I know. All right. Well, Ed and Chris, then, that begs the question, are you through some sort of telepathic connection, inviting these craft to make a nice showing in your skies, or is your meditation intention that is manifesting these things in your skies?
It's not the second one, at least not here. In England, I've done this, and we've had many times over ball plasma appear, a ball of electrified airborne gas, looks like a fireball.
Right.
In these cases, I would say yes. These are psychokinetically co-created, manifested energy forms. But with the objects that we've been filming and witnessing over our apartment, I would say these aren't manifested. They don't feel that way. And that's something I also feel since I've had many close encounters. I tend to sense, I really do apply my consciousness to the subject. And often I will, from a distance, feel whether this is something extraterrestrial or not. But what we have been doing that's slightly different from many groups around the world is we haven't been seeking contact. We haven't been trying to pursue contact so much as simply inviting benevolent ET intelligences out there to participate in the synchronized global meditation that we participate in. So we participate in a global Earth Healing World Peace meditation every Sunday with many people around the world. This isn't something that we started, but it's something that we support, have supported for many years. And but what we do that's different from say, some groups is that before we get underway, before we try to visualize positive outcomes for planet Earth and humanity, we simply invite, any benevolent ET civilization out there to participate with us in consciousness if they can and would like to, and if possible, to grant us a sign of their participation, a sign of their presence, and a sign of support. And we also ask permission to be able to record that so we can then share it with other people. And this is what we've done many times recently here, and more than half the time we do that, not every time, but more than half the time we do that, we usually have an object appear within 30 minutes. usually less. And there is nothing more empowering in my experience of ufology than to take the initiative, do a meditation, invite their participation, and ask them to show that they were there if they can and it's safe for them to do so. And then they manifest a few minutes afterwards. So we're not pursuing contact. Not that we're not open to contact. I've had close encounters of the third kind since childhood, several times in my life, a number of times in my life. But I feel that the message here and what we really would like to promote to people is to try this where they are, especially when they know that many people, sometimes thousands of people, are participating in the same moment in a meditation. So if you slip in at the beginning your invitation to any benevolent civilization out there to participate in the synchronized meditation with you and to show if they can, obviously you need to be patient. You need to not do this simply to have to witness something. You know, if you're doing this to see a UFO, you're doing it for the wrong reasons. We primarily do a meditation for the Earth and humanity, believing, or rather knowing, that the psychokinetic energy of our consciousness and everybody else's consciousness taking part in that moment is a very potent thing. And the more we can invite, the more we can involve, there's plenty of evidence that at least some of the visiting extraterrestrial intelligences here do care about planet Earth and what's happening.
How do you know they're benevolent?
In my experience, I can say that I've experienced both. I've had close encounters in my past that have involved encountering a being, and the experience was very positive. It was an abduction-type experience. It taught me a lot and opened my mind to many things. And on the other hand, though, I have had one or two encounters that were very frightening, very negative, very unpleasant, and so we have to discern. I mean, obviously, there's more than one kind visiting. There's more than one type of experience. And to know which is which, because that's a very good question when they're turning up in your sky, I think that you'll know them by the way they behave. And that's one of the best guides we have. And
okay, well, I'm going to tell you right now that most of the people who are going to go up to the website and look at these photographs are going to say, well, they're the usual collection of fuzzy images, and I can't tell what these are. I have no reference. I have no trees. I have no buildings. I have nothing. No reference for these images that are kind of fuzzy.
Yeah, these are just cropped images that we've thrown up there to show you the object. These
there are MPEGs on our website. We have MPEGs. If people go to the reports on our site, many of these are on there in the form of MPEGs where they can
If you go to the news page on our website, cropcircleanswers.com, or go to the Ed and Chris Sherwood UFO Sightings page and click on some of the images, instead of seeing the one thumbnail that you will see on the page that you have linked, you may see the whole report, and you'll see more images. And also, as Chris just mentioned, we have posted some MPEGs, so you can get more of an idea. But we are very unfunded here, and we are also, we could do better with better equipment. But I ask the audience that's looking at the pictures to have an open mind, to follow the links, to look at the pages on our website where we give more information. And, if they're interested, digest that. Because, yes, these images aren't crystal clear. These objects were very close, but not close enough to give you that much detail. But if you watch the footage, some of the pieces we've got are very, very compelling, at least as compelling as some of the best out there.
And many of them, we want to say, we don't believe necessarily have beings aboard. Some of these things appear to be probes and smaller objects, devices of some sort, so that we don't...
Yes, I believe you two are really seeing these, and I believe you're really photographing them. I just, I'm wondering... Are these things that you have manifested? I mean, there's no way you can know for certain that that is not the case. Now, obviously, you meditate, you want these things to manifest, and then you see them. So how in the world can you not know that you're not the ones doing it?
Well, you obviously have to investigate that. And I've witnessed more than 100 ball plasmas appear in association with research that I've done out in the fields in England, which I would definitely say were co-manifested by the presence of mine and other people's consciousness often in the environment.
Yes.
However, there are ball plasma types of UFO, and there are also structured technological extraterrestrial types of UFO, which I've witnessed. We've witnessed both in England and here. And you know, my contact experience, or rather my experience of the ET presence, goes right back into my childhood. And I grew up ingrained with it because it was happening all the time. And I did develop a psychic ability, which I've had since a child, to be able to sense the presence of these things more often than not, before they become visible. And also, since 1992, I've been able to see many of these vehicles, objects, appearing when others cannot see them. Or rather, I see them before other people, before they become physically visible. And
so you're more sensitive than other people are to them. But you're saying that eventually, if you see something, you see it first, and then other people begin to see it.
In many cases, and I say that only to say that I have seen ball plasma materialize to the presence of luminous balls of light, which we've got pictures of on page 4, which no one could see before it became physically visible. I've also seen devices, discs, appear, metallic, silvery, reflective, that other people couldn't see either.
All right, hold it right there. We're at a break point. Ed and Chris Sherwood. Santa Monica, the skies over Santa Monica, and they do have photographs of some mighty strange-looking things. From the high desert and the great American Southwest, I'm Art Bell. Here I am. We have a difficult humming sound on the phone that has Ed and Chris Sherwood, so that may limit the amount of time we spend with the interview this evening. And we may get them to another phone and do this interview perhaps at another time. At any rate, we'll give it another shot here in a moment. We've reconnected with them, and we'll see how it sounds. Coming up in a moment, once again, Ed and Chris Sherwood. Once again, Ed and Chris Sherwood, welcome back.
Thank you.
Hi, hello.
Hi.
How's that hum sounding to you now? Is it getting any better?
It's not awful, but it's not good either. It's sort of distracting to the interview. Is this something new on your line? Because I know you've done interviews previously.
Yes.
No, yep. We've never had such a problem. And we've done similar shows numerous times.
Hmm.
I don't know if it has something to do. I know you had a power outage last night. Could it have something to do with that?
Did you really?
No, I think Santa, you did.
Yes, we had a power outage, but you're not connecting to me on the telephone. You're connecting to the network in California, so it's on your phone.
Oh, I see. Oh, gosh. Okay, well, maybe there's some local problem going on that we're not aware of.
Yeah. Listen, I've got to say again, I've got to be honest with you. These first images on page 1... I'm sent images by people all the time of one thing or another because it's the kind of work I do. Mm-hmm. And if I were sent these first, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 images, I would just dismiss them out of hand. I honestly would, because you just can't see what they're just blurbs.
Well, they're just showing you the form of the object. They're a cropped
right.
image. They're not showing you the whole view. It's not possible to put multiple images on a page that small and really show you what the object
sure.
is unless I crop it, blow it up. And you need to read the report, and then there's an MPEG with some of these that can be watched.
Mm-hmm.
And we are very careful of what we put out. And
sure. An MPEG would be, an MPEG, you're right, would be a lot more impressive because you'd see its movement at least.
Yeah, you can't appreciate necessarily the sighting by just looking at the still we've posted. We've only posted those stills to give you an idea of the form and the different forms or similar forms in various cases. But these were shot off the television. These are several generations even away from the original footage.
See, that's a bad thing. You don't really...
We don't have the equipment.
I'll tell you, Ed, you're almost better off not showing something like this at all. You're almost better off.
I don't know, really. I disagree about that because the images we've posted show a range of different forms. And if you follow the report further, and we, as I say, we've done a lot of research. I wouldn't put something up there that is.
Oh, suspect, I think you've honestly put them up. I'm telling you, I know how the public reacts, and I guarantee you how. I want to ask you about image 12. Now, this is some sort of interesting. You call it a flying device. I have no idea what it is, but it is kind of interesting. What is that?
This is an image from a piece of footage from Mexico that was shot in June of 2005, showing a apparent flying humanoid on some type of aerial device that was obviously assisting it. And this was shot very close by a gentleman, Horacio Roquette, who's now filmed the same type of flying humanoid, which has been witnessed and filmed many times in Mexico now, although not always. In fact, most often it doesn't. There doesn't seem to be a device with the humanoid figure that's flying through the air, but this was a case where there was. And Mexico has a history of flying humanoid, flying entity in their legends, entities in their legends. And this is something I researched after we witnessed a apparent flying humanoid over our apartment in 2004, just 2 months after we saw for the first time footage of these flying humanoids coming out of Mexico.
Interesting. All right. Now, you say a flying humanoid. I don't get that necessarily out of the picture, but it looks like a big flying something. How do you get humanoid out of that?
Well, I've seen the footage. I've seen both pieces of footage. I've seen more than 15 clips of flying humanoid footage from Mexico. And watching this object, in the most general way I could describe it, flying over a rooftop, it just looks like a humanoid something sitting on something, which has a luminous red light discharge, perhaps, out of the back of it, and this thing clearly flies over the rooftop. I can't obviously show you that in the still image, and I don't...
Is this a humanoid form with wings?
No. As of early 2004 in Mexico, many people began to witness and some film what looked like humanoid entities, small, with like a dark cape or covering outfit on, just flying through the air, apparently unaided. And we attended a presentation given by Mexican ufologist Santiago Uteria in August of 2004, where we saw many, many clips. And then 2 months later, while we were just two blocks from our apartment walking a dog, broad daylight early in the morning, I looked up and saw an object coming towards us over the rooftops. And at first thought it was a helicopter, and then as it came closer, it clearly was a figure. It was a humanoid shape, a form, and had the same characteristics to look at as these others we have seen footage of from Mexico. And the moment I said to Chris, I'm going to run back to the apartment and try and film this, it stopped and flew straight towards our apartment very slowly. I got in, got the camera, started to film it, and managed to get just over a minute of footage as it passed over our apartment. And this has happened a number of times where... we have either learned something about sightings, new sightings, you know, unprecedented sightings in Mexico, and then we've witnessed it ourselves, or as of recently, we've had sightings happening above our apartment and neighborhood happening by objects appearing that are identical to objects appearing over Mexico City, even within the same hour. And I have close ties with Mexican ufologists, and I've been disseminating since 1992 that there's even a very powerful connection, very strong, important connection between the unprecedented UFO sighting over Mexico City in 91 on July 11th and a series of massive crop circle signs that appeared in Wiltshire. So I've been disseminating to researchers and the public since 92 that the historic largest, most witnessed and videotaped UFO sighting in history that happened over Mexico City on July 11th, 91, the significance of that event, and it was reflected not just in the sky over Mexico City, but also on the ground in crop circle formations in England.
All right, I'm getting a lot of messages. One's from Mark in Lake Worth, Florida. He says, look, I've seen the video for these images. Trust me, it's very good, extremely credible. So the video is very good, but unfortunately, what you seem to have done is, you've taken pictures from a television screen. So you took a still photograph from a TV screen to create these?
I transferred the Hyatt tape onto VHS and then played it on TV and then photographed it.
Yeah.
And I've tried different things. I've tried getting video grabs from these, and we don't have either the best software or the best computer or the best technical help. But
all right, people want to see the video. So give me your website, please, where they can actually see the videos.
If they go to cropcircleanswers.com.
And cropcircleanswers.com?
Cropcircleanswers.com, and go to the news page. Scroll down the news page, you'll see various sighting reports, brief sighting reports listed, including MPEGs at the bottom of some of them.
Okay.
And they are definitely worth watching. I mean, the image number 4, for example, of what I call the UFO sphere container, you can see how that flew behind a palm tree and how large this object was in comparison. It was probably no more than half a mile away at most, and a few thousand feet up in the air.
And it flew to a dead stop just as it was about to pass out of vision and stayed dead still in the air for quite some time, and then it proceeded to backtrack the whole distance that it had flown, and it filmed the whole sighting.
I was just actually thinking at the time while I was filming it, I'm going to lose you now. You're going to go behind a building and that's it. End of sighting. And as soon as I thought that, this object stopped on a dime and just stayed completely still in a strong gusting wind for 2 minutes. And it's very impressive to even watch the footage to see that.
What I'm saying, Ed. One of two things is happening. Either there's a communication going on between you and the objects, and or you're manifesting them yourself.
I can tell you, as God is my witness, I've experienced this so many times. I can tell you, I'm not asking anyone to believe in what we're saying, but just keep an open mind to it. From my experience, I've had many close encounters from the first to the fifth kind, these are not manifested. These were invited. These were specifically invited, most of these were invited to, we sent out a specific invitation to extraterrestrial benevolent intelligences to participate in the meditations. And
All right. Ed and Chris, I want to ask you both. You're not the only ones doing this. There are a number of groups across, the world. Mm-hmm. That are using signaling devices. They're using meditation and various methods to invite these kind of encounters. And by God, they're getting photographs of these things. We've got people up in the northwest part of the U.S. that are doing this now. It's actually fairly common. So,
yes,
we are more people to do the same.
I know. I understand that. And it works. My question, Ed and Chris, is why, if these are very advanced beings, either from our future or from some other world, some other star system, Why toy around with appearing to people like Ed and Chris Sherwood and others, well-meaning people? What's the point of doing this as opposed to real contact, contact with our government leaders, contact with our civilization, official contact? What are they doing?
Well, there's all kinds of contact going on, plus multiple extraterrestrial civilizations have been testing our sociological response for decades with sightings over major centers of population in many cases. They can see how we are. I mean, we're a very aggressive species, and we're full of unresolved issues of our own. I mean, the issue of the subject of contact is an extremely delicate thing, I think, from their perspective, especially since if you're really advanced, then you do not want to offend free will. You do not want to just arrive and start revealing how it all is or how it is for you, and in such a way that it would make us feel very insignificant. I think that they have demonstrated now for decades, and this is something that's accelerating, increasing, and I think that we are all heading towards a global mass externalization of UFOs in our near future. I don't know when. I'm not putting any time on that. But just watching what is happening and looking at what's happened over the last few decades, seeing that UFOs are an increasing phenomenon, increasing over centers of population too. I mean, they obviously want to be seen, some of these intelligences. I mean, how can they do some of the things we would like them to do if we cannot even acknowledge they exist? I mean, you and I and many of the listeners to this show acknowledge they exist. But
well, one of the reasons it's hard to acknowledge they exist is because we get fuzzy little pictures, or even some pretty good video,
yeah,
and I acknowledge that you've got some pretty good video, but it's not enough in the modern world, and you and I both know it. People don't accept what they cannot prove, and we have not yet proven it.
We all know also that the evidence most likely exists in vast quantities. It's just not being given to us.
It's not being presented on mainstream television, but it definitely exists. I mean,
so it's your theory they're testing us. That's what you said, testing us.
Yes, and I say that word loosely because I think, you know, it's a process of raising our consciousness. We are now in a time, in an era of increasing cosmic awareness. That is, humanity's global mind, collective mind, as not just individuals, but the collective mind, has become, in the last decade, so much more aware of its cosmic environment. That's both natural cosmic environment and, I think, the environment that includes extraterrestrial reality. And this is something we need to know as a species in order to survive, I think, into the next millennium. And they have been appearing for centuries, if not thousands of years, periodically, many different types coming and going. Some probably have no concern for us, or at least they seem to behave that way. Others appear to. And there are individuals who they've made close contact with, like myself, for example, at times. But at the same time, I think that they, you know, they're not there to solve all our problems. They are showing us another reality, and a reality
Ed, I can see, for example, that a benevolent extraterrestrial that is many, 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 many years ahead of us in technologically would perhaps adhere to, you know, Star Trek's prime directive. In other words, don't tamper. But those who are not benevolent, those who really don't care that much about us, and you acknowledge there are some of those, certainly wouldn't care one bit, would they? They would either take what they need or do what they need to do for their own interests and tell with us.
And there's a lot in between, I think, too. I think it's not just like that, just sort of one and the other. I think that, too, you have civilizations that are definitely aware and concerned about the planet, And I think that it's not that this prime directive thing, I think, is a fact, but they have interfered or interacted with us. I shouldn't say interfered, but interacted with us. And I say they as in the collective of however many species have come and gone here since the birth of human civilization. But because they have affected our consciousness by their very presence, even if it's only a brief sighting sometimes, I feel that they have a responsibility. It's, in a sense, I think of the planet as a Genesis project, which they have very much helped to instigate. And so because they have interacted with us in different ways throughout our history, they have a responsibility. They cannot just walk away. Even though we are the guardians of this planet, or should be, we are the ones who have to carry the burden of responsibility of what we do here. They too have also have a responsibility to stay with the project and to stay with us and to not let us destroy this planet, even though they may have to suffer to see us destroy it or destroying it. I feel I've felt this for more than 20 years, and I feel that we're living in that time where we just may well see this come to pass.
All right. We're going to have to break for the hour in a moment. I do want you to comment on something. I read a story in the first hour. I don't know if you heard it. A group of researchers working at the Human Genome Project indicate they made an astonishing scientific discovery. They believe so-called 97% non-coding sequences in human DNA is no less than genetic code of extraterrestrial life forms. In other words, these scientists, these are legitimate scientists, believe they have discovered what we call junk DNA is actually extraterrestrial DNA, as though we were a designed life form and we were sort of executed like a program would be executed at some point before we were finished, as it were. Before we were finished as a species. So when you get back, I would love to have you comment on that. That makes us all a little bit E.T. I'm Art Bell. Here I am. And with me this evening, and a bit of hum, is Ed and Chris Sherwood. They're talking to us about things they've seen in the skies over Santa Monica. They've got an apartment in Santa Monica now. I'm going to say this again. I don't mean to be unnecessarily tough on them. But if you go and you look at the videos that they've got on their website, I think you'll be mightily impressed. The videos are, let's put it this way, the still photographs that they've sent in to Coast to Coast are pale imitations of the real video that they've collected. And in my opinion only, they would have been better served not putting these up at all, because the average person is going to go up there and look at it and say, oh, God, the same old sort of blurbs of fuzzy shapes. And to be honest, that's what they are. So go look at the videos in order to decide about the credibility of what they're doing and what they're photographing. Instead of looking at the still photographs, go to their website and look at the videos. I'm Art Bell. We'll be right back. Again, guys, I don't mean to be unnecessarily hard on you, but ufology faces a very, very difficult uphill climb in trying to convince the public of anything at all. And if you give them fuzzy shots that you took from a TV screen, you know, you're going to get a lot of flack. That's all there is to it. But your videos are excellent, and that's what I recommend people go and see. Now, this story is remarkable. From the Human Genome Project, scientists there think that some of our DNA is ET DNA.
Yes, I read that report when it came on the internet.
Yes, what do you think about that?
Not surprised if that's true. There's a lot of evidence around the world of different cultures in their distant history referring to a being or more beings, multiple beings, interacting with humanity, including genetically, sexually.
Do you think we're created? Do you think the two of you were created beings?
No. I do think, though, I've always felt that when someone says, why do ETs look like, a lot of the ETs that I've seen, witnessed, look like us. I think really the question should be, why do we look like them? And that they preceded us in their history and very likely seeded us. I do think, though, that the planet Earth has its own natural, over time, over millennia, was able to produce a hominid form. And they just may have come here, seen that, or known about it beforehand, and tinkered with the DNA to accelerate its development. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, surely there is a time in evolution that was very, very fast, a time they cannot account for, when an awful lot of fast things happened. That's probably what you're talking about.
35,000 mm-hmm. years ago, just suddenly humanity had fire and was drawing pictures in cave walls and seemed to be developing a simple religion.
So, all right, the two of you have been long-time crop circle investigators.
Yeah.
Is there an overall message to be found within non-man-made crop circle formations? And if so, I would dearly love to know what it is.
Yes, we definitely feel that the crop circles, the genuine non-man-made crop circles, were a communication. We feel...
Most of them.
Yes, most of them, and that there were many messages and much information contained in that communication. And what we've devoted most of our effort toward documenting what we have gleaned from what we've seen in these formations from the beginning through the cycle, through the completion of the communication.
Okay, well, that's a general answer. Give me a specific
message. Sorry to cut you off. Yeah. If there was
that's
an overall message, I would say that it's that we co-create our physical world reality psychokinetically, and this is one of those phenomena that reveal that. We're not the creators of it, but we do co-create it psychokinetically by the energy of our consciousness. And there is so much evidence, has been so much evidence in the fields in the form of pictographic formations that affirm the potency of our consciousness. For example, in 92, I was with Dr. Stephen Greer and a group of people on a hill in Wiltshire, mm-hmm. and late at night, and this is one of many examples I could give you. He spontaneously asked the group, let's think of a design for the circle-making intelligence or intelligences to make. So in silence, we sat for 2 minutes, and then he asked, there were 9 of us in total, each and every one of us, well, what did you think? And 7 out of 9 of us all thought the same thing, which was very interesting, I thought at the time, and that was 3 circles in an equilateral triangle connected by a straight pathway. You can see the image on page 2, figure 13. And so we then visualized this crop circle design for about 20 minutes. We sent the thought out into the universe. We didn't know if anything would appear, and we didn't try to will anything to occur, but for the very first time, a few miles away, the very next morning, the exact design was found in a field.
But you were willing it to appear. You were transmitting intent.
We were transmitting a form, a design,
yes.
for the circle making intelligence or intelligences to make. So we just visualized it, but we had no idea if it would appear. And so I'm trying to say here that here's an example where a group of people visualized the same thing and then it manifested. But mm-hmm. in my mind, think more of a global poltergeist than something extraterrestrial, because most of these non-man-made pictograms, in our view, were not made by an extraterrestrial intelligence at all, but are more the manifestations of what you could think of metaphorically as a global poltergeist. Not a poltergeist in the usual sense of the term, aggressive or angry type of energy generated from a living human individual or someone deceased, but think more of the collective mind energy of the planet. In fact, it's more than that, but we are involved in this process very much, in the creative process of most non-man-made crops of creation. And an analogy I could use is some years ago, Chris and I attended a presentation given by the world-famous psychic Uri Geller. And in the palm of his hand, a miracle occurred, which we witnessed only a foot and a half away from. We saw someone put in his palm a hard radish seed, ungerminated, you know, rock hard, straight from a packet, just opened, plopped in his hand. Within seconds, this seed was sprouting a stem and leaves in the palm of his hand. Now, in my understanding of psychokinesis, and I've experienced many times poltergeist effects and similar things throughout my life, Uri did not create that. He did not make that happen, except that by applying his consciousness, by surrendering himself to something greater, that force came through and worked that little miracle, or great miracle. We feel that the human mind, or minds, because in some cases it can involve up to millions of minds, the energy of combined human consciousness has helped to co-create these formations. But we are living in a time when many things are being revealed to us, if we're paying attention, and I think that in addition to extraterrestrial reality revealing itself, we have also been witnessing in the crop circle phenomenon signs affirming through the reality of what we could even call God. These are miracles. These were miracles that happened in the field. These were created events from a cosmic universal mind, maybe the ultimate collective mind we can conceive of. And why do we think this? Because the message that has been given repeatedly and the answer that's been given to the question that many people, including ourselves, have asked, who and what is behind this phenomenon? Who and what is really has been creating this worldwide phenomenon? The answer to that question has been given for more than 20 years, every year in the fields, up until 2001 in England. And it repeatedly stated, divine, infinite, universal. And it did this through giving us formations where multicultural symbols, sacred symbols, typically, were combined to reveal this answer, I think.
Yes, and in such perfect geometrical construction, sacred geometry, but also sacred geometrical proportions, and without having diagrams, it's really hard to describe, but having the spacing and sizing of all the elements precisely geometrically sized and tangented. And,
a beautiful example.
What I want to ask is how you know that that's what it's saying?
Well, for example, if people who can look go to page 2 and look at image number 5, this was the first pictogram that I decoded or deciphered back in 1990. This is the formation that very much opened my eyes to the metaphorical language of non-man-made crop circle pictograms. And it was a very beautifully simple formation. It was almost like a mathematical formula, just like E equals MC squared.
I'm looking at it right now.
Okay. Very simple-looking pictogram, but had a lot to say. Now, I looked at that formation in 1990, and after a series of experiences I had, which involved experiencing a sound, a very anomalous sound inside a crop formation, I looked into my physics books, and after thinking that there could be a connection between sound and crop circle creation, and I found this diagram, which is shown on the right-hand side of this image, mm-hmm. of the interference pattern generated by a vibrating tuning fork. And when I looked at the diagram, the silhouette of the formation, it looked almost identical, as if a part of that information is within that formation. It's saying sound. It's saying vibration. But in addition to that, it's also a very simple ancient sacred symbol, the oldest symbol, to depict the sun and God, or a creator God. And that is a circle with a ring around it. That's a very simple symbol, but it is the oldest, most commonly used ancient sacred symbol to symbolize the sun and God, or creator God. And since in antiquity, most often the creator God was deified with as the sun, the source of all life on earth. But here we have the answer to the question, who and what is behind the non-man-made crop-circle phenomenon?
All right. For both of you, how do you discern, if you would please, how do you two discern between the real McCoy crop circles and the man-made stuff?
Through a preponderance of evidence, which includes biophysical evidence, mathematical, symbolic, geometric, physical, logistical, phenomenal. There are many things we look at to determine that.
Yes.
Sometimes
it's
very easy.
Yes. And after you've seen so many formations, it you can almost on site get a good sense of what the source is. And as Ed has said before, and we've said before, it's as if a graphologist studying handwriting.
We are like that. We've studied it like that.
Yes, when you've studied handwriting enough, you can recognize a certain handwriting. You can pick it out of hundreds of others. You can recognize the characteristics and the signs that signify, the source of that handwriting.
We've made a great study, or a big study, I should say, of the possible design symbolism or meaning of these formations. What is the communication? So we've spent a lot of time looking at the symbols and symbology. And imagine you study a dozen people's handwriting for 15 years. You are going to become very sensitive after a while to the little inflections and nuances and particularities of one person's way of communicating. Well, in the same way, we have studied hundreds and hundreds of formations year in, year out. And we feel like we're in the position of the man that decoded hieroglyphics. I forget the gentleman's name right now, a Frenchman in the turn of the century. Many people tried to decipher hieroglyphics, and eventually one person did, deciphering the Rosetta Stone. And that opened up the whole world of hieroglyphics to him. Well, if someone was to slip him a sheet of paper showing real hieroglyphics and fake ones, even ones that are just, adjustments to slight...
He would know.
He would know. And we have studied the design symbolism of formations that we feel by a preponderance of evidence were non-man-made for years. And we have found things in them that are just startling. I mean, also scientific things that you would never think to find from a crop circle, things that teach us things, revelatory things, and information that no person could have come up with.
Okay, for example, you said scientific things. I'm interested. Like what?
Well, for example, image number 8 on page 2, we had the most witnessed and videotaped UFO sighting in history occurred on July 11th, 1991, over the world's largest city. 19 days later, a massive pictogram materialized in the fields of Wiltshire, one of several which were to follow. And one of these depicted what looks like a cross-section of a flying saucer and a plan view of a dolphin. And so it looked as if it had two messages within one, something to do with dolphins, something to do with flying saucer. I looked at this formation, and I thought, well, what links the two? And, well, one thing that links the two is dolphins communicate by ultrasound. They live in a water element. There's a tremendous association between UFOs and water. And also, there's great evidence that UFOs employ frequencies to do specific things. including if you look at the biophysical evidence of many crop formations, especially those that appear to be made by a technological source, non-human source, invariably the energies emitted by these devices can create very dramatic effects in the soil and plants that are exposed to it. And in the case of this formation in England, when the soil was analyzed, they found 13 radioisotopes in the soil, which could not be there naturally. They could only find, researchers who did this work basically found what could only be found in a nuclear laboratory. And they found isotopes, including deuterium isotope, which is known as heavy water. Well, here you had a formation where you had a dolphin symbol within the flying saucer symbol, or rather the two combined. Mm-hmm. But also in the same year, 1991, there were several other pictograms appeared, and I had a secret meeting with a top nuclear physicist in England in 93, a one-on-one, all-day mindstorm where I shared all of my discoveries to do with the physics of crop circle creation, and he shared to me what he shared, what he discovered. And this was someone who could mix elements in a laboratory. And he had a sideline interest in crop circles, and he looked at the formations, and two jumped out at him as of interest. He got the measurements of those formations. He looked at the numbers generated by the formations in a different way to anybody else.
All right, Ed, we're going to have to finish this up after the break. All right, we'll find out what he had to say. Ed and Chris Sherwood are my guests. They're photographing UFOs above their apartment in Santa Monica. I'm Art Bell. Indeed, here I am. A couple of people writing to me, fast-blasting, that this story on the Human Genome Project has been around for a while. Indeed, it has. It points to a link that goes back to about 2001 on this, but does not call it junk. It just simply repeats the story. So we'll have to look into that further. But apparently, most people know about it. So it's very, very, very interesting. Ed and Chris Sherwood, back in a moment. By the way, we're going to open the lines here in a moment and let you ask them questions. And I would be very interested in some of your impressions, some of you who have gone up and looked at the photographs, or perhaps better yet, have looked at some of the videos. And I would be very interested in some of the audience's perception about whether you think these are consciousness manifestations. In other words, what they're seeing, what they're photographing, is real. It's obviously real. But the big question is it a manifestation of their own consciousness, or is it a cooperative deal with the others and our consciousness, or is this real hardware in our skies just being called? It's really hard to put it together. In a moment, though, we'll try. We'll be right back. Well, all right, Ed, you want to continue with your story, and I want to get a few phone calls in here shortly.
Sure. Very quickly, this gentleman, a physicist, found very interesting numbers from two pictograms, and when he looked at those numbers, or rather looked at a table of elements, the numbers referring to elements on a table of elements, and then looked at the numbers generated from this formation, two formations, he recognized the numbers of elements there, and because he had means to mix those elements, he made several breakthrough discoveries in his field, which was a major development in his particular area.
What was his field?
Nuclear physics. And he was involved, as were many other people in different countries, trying to create new types of materials, such as superconducting materials and polymer-type materials. And some of this information was within crop circles, within two pictograms. And these were 1991 formations, and during that summer, we had several pictograms, including these flying saucer, dolphin-gram-looking formations,
mm-hmm.
which, you know, I looked at those formations, for example, and, you know, if you look at it, you see the cross-section symbolized, cross-section of a flying saucer, and it has a ring at each end. And I looked at those rings, if you look at pic number 8 on page 2, and I thought, what could they represent? And I imagined them three-dimensionally, and I imagined them as spears rather than rings. And because I've seen craft emitting plasma, and I've seen balls of plasma appear in conjunction with devices, discs included, this to me looked like a representation of a spinning flying saucer with ball plasma on the rim of the disc.
It would sure be helpful if somebody like the scientist you mentioned, for example, would go public and say, look, I made some strides in physics because of these two crop circles.
He told me that his superior asked him how he managed to come up with these new mixtures. And he had to say it was inspiration. It was an intuitive thing. Could not say at the time it was crop circles, and I was sworn not to at the time say more, and because it would compromise him and his family. So, you know, I've kept it minimal. But in addition to him, I too have made discoveries, scientific discoveries in crop circles to do with sound and ultrasound. Back in 1990, I discovered that there was tremendous evidence to tie the physics of sound and ultrasound to the biophysics of non-man-made crop circle creation. And, for example, the trilling sound, which is an unusual sound that's been heard, I've witnessed it several times in proximity to crop circle, for certain crop circle formations. It sounds like a loud cicada, very loud at times. And this sound was successfully recorded and analyzed, and back in 1989, and found to have a frequency of 5.2 kilohertz. Well, I discovered back in 1990 that experiments were done in the 60s on exposing different plants to different types of music, different frequencies, different notes. And when experimenters took wheat in a chamber and exposed it to the frequency of 5 kilohertz, it grew better than any other frequency it was exposed to. So the frequency of the trilling sound, which is, has been witnessed and heard in conjunction with crop circle creation, is the frequency that wheat best grows at. And we took seeds from a formation in 95, for example, and grew them, wheat seeds, and when they sprouted, they developed 6 wheat heads per wheat stem. Imagine what you could do with that. You could have smaller fields with higher yields, probably all because of a frequency that that plant was exposed to when the formation went down. And again, looking at the 91 formation, the saucer dolphin gram, which it was called, there is a reference to sound there. Dolphins emit ultrasound. I found experiments done in the 60s in a reference in the book, The Secret Life of Plants, a book I had for 10 years, more than 10 years in 1990. In that book are many, many examples of experiments that were done on plants and soils with different types of music and frequency, and the biophysical effects that they reported, including plants bending towards the sound source or bending away from it or not moving while others bend, different species bend. We have seen all of this in non-man-made crop circle biophysics.
And also, I'd like to say, year after year, sound has been referenced in different ways in crop circles, up in, and including the year 2000, where solar physicists had sent a telescope, and they were doing mapping of the way the sun generates ultrasonic sound that it generates and pulses outward, and that we're always bathed in, our planet and the solar system is bathed in this ultrasonic solar vibration. And in 2000, they determined that it was resonating in square, literally square patches on the sun. And I wish we had this picture to show, but on our articles page, you can find the article that I wrote and was published about this. And the two final formations of the year, crop circle formations in England, were exact depictions of what they discovered that very year as far as helioseismology in the way the sun is propagating sound waves, and it was illustrated in these two crop circles in the year 2000.
All right. Well, let's field a couple of questions. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Ed and Chris Sherwood.
Yes, Art, this is Frost from Louisville, Kentucky, 12-year listener, fourth-time caller. And,
yes, sir.
I was curious if your guest had ever seen, I seen years ago, a video of two, like you talked about that plasma light or you know, they two of them floated around a field, a wheat field, and floated around a zigzag back and forth. And all at once, they stopped, come together, and then the whole entire crop circle laid down in one quick pattern.
We know the video. Unfortunately, in our view, that was a hoax. It was a well-exposed hoax.
The person who made it came out publicly.
Yeah, eventually he came out. He had a graphics business and revealed that he actually made the video. Several people interviewed him, and he showed evidence of this. And plus, you know, as soon as Chris and I looked at that video the very first time, within days of it being exposed, I've seen many ball plasmas. And there was something about that footage that showed to me that it was like a computer-generated thing. These were not actual lights in the field. And also the cameraman didn't act naturally in relation to them. He didn't move the camera as they moved. He stayed very static, like the whole thing was staged. And then, of course, the formation appearing. Now, I'm not an expert in computer animation effects, but when I looked at the way the formation appeared, that, too, to me, looked like someone had tried to graphically put it in. And
yes, yeah, I'd like
Chris
to say as soon as I saw it, because I've worked in animation, that's my day job, and I've been a Clio judge for computer animation, and I could tell immediately that it was computer animation when I studied the footage and stated so publicly in 1997.
Okay. Let me ask you, too, what percentage of crop circles, in your opinion, are the real McCoy versus man-made?
Okay. If you were to collect together all of the known reports of all formations from every country going back many decades,
yes.
I feel that if you took that number and you put that question into the computer, you would find that less than 10% have been non-man-made. More than 90% at this point have been man-made, unfortunately.
Wow.
The human hoaxing problem or deceptive circle-making problem was clear and evident in 1990, and it has been with us ever since. And there are some very determined groups been going out every year, getting mechanically better at what they do, although obviously they cannot duplicate certain things.
No, but they can fool a lot of people, which
yeah.
they have done.
We feel, from the evidence that we have found, that most non-man-made crop circle formations that have appeared over the last 20 years were a communication. And as a communication, it had a beginning, a middle, and an end. And if you noticed what the communication was and when it started and where it was going, you could see where it ended up. And we feel like this was a prophesized, prophetic phenomenon of our time, which to a large extent was not recognized because largely, to the prodigious amount of human circle making that there has been.
All right. Have the non-man-made crop circles ended?
Not worldwide. We have noticed since 2001, documented, that there have been a few non-man-made formations in various parts of the world, but in the place where there has been the most, i.e. within 40 miles of Stonehenge, we have not seen a non-man-made formation in England since 2001. And we're talking about in England, where most have appeared. And, you know, in different years, the number has varied. But it's like UFOs. It's like paranormal phenomena. A lot of what is reported can be explained as in the case of crop circles, as man-made. When
all right, let's go back to UFOs for a second. We seem to be in the middle of a kind of a flap, not only what you're seeing, but what has just gone on in Chicago, for example.
Yeah, worldwide. Yeah.
So while the crop circles have sort of diminished, I guess you would agree with that, wouldn't you?
Yes.
The UFO sightings seem to be on the upswing right now.
We've been saying for some time that look up rather than look down. Look more up for the signs of our times than look down for them, because we had them for more than 20 years in the fields. Communication was very clear, very repeatedly stated.
Why do you think they've stopped, essentially stopped, not completely perhaps?
More than one reason, but one of them is, we feel, because it has been understood. And you can analogize the global poltergeist, if you like, that has been manifesting formations co-created by us, our own psychokinetic energy, in this special time we're in. Sorry, I've lost my thread.
That's quite all right.
I'd like to say one of the reasons, too, is that this is inherently a profoundly spiritual phenomenon, very spiritual, having to do with our higher consciousness, our collective consciousness. And once it was so overrun with hoaxing and so much confusion, so much merchandising, so many, you know, infighting, different factions of
completely
of the,
not what the phenomenon
community.
Is about.
Yeah, it's like the spiritual part of it kind of shrunk back and just left the human element to
The phenomenon became overran by the hoaxes and very much reduced down to infighting groups and individuals. And we found ourselves increasingly over time more and more alone within this apparent community of researchers, which is not really the case. Obviously, there are different views, different opinions, but what we've run up against over and over again is a very strong element that does not want to find out the answers to this phenomenon and would rather pursue pumping the mystery and actually making money and living through the myth of the continuance of this phenomenon.
Okay, what about you? Are you, Ed and Chris, making money at this, or do you...
No, we've not made,
we've not made
a dime. In fact, we've been made
broke totally
over and over.
Totally self-funded and put all of our funds into this project.
But let me just add a positive thing to that, though. I would like to say to the audience that despite us saying that we have not seen a non-man-made formation in England since 2001, and that the phenomenon from what we consider to be the primary source has mostly stopped. If you look back 20 years, look at what has appeared over the last 20 years as non-man-made pictographic formations. We have had several hundred in that time. So the fact that it is not continuing does not take away the fact that we have already had an incredible series of visual communications and other things referenced in them.
And you maintain, both of you, that it has stopped because it is understood.
Yeah, think of I'll give you an analogy which perhaps people would understand. Poltergeist is very much like this. I witnessed a woman generating poltergeist activity years ago who didn't realize it was coming from her. She was going through a very emotional time, and she asked me to come in as a psychic to try to sense what was happening in her home. I put out my psychic feelers. I didn't pick up a spirit. I didn't pick up an ET. I didn't pick up an entity. I suspected by the behavior of this poltergeist, which ended up aggressing me, that it was coming from her. And I said to her, I suspect that you have some issues, that you have great difficulty talking about. Let's talk about them. Let's talk about the very things you have the most difficulty talking about.
Mm-hmm.
She broke down. It was very upsetting. She revealed all these things. No more poltergeist activity. She brought out of her subconscious into her conscious mind the very things that were generating, co-creating this phenomena. We feel that if you take, now think of, instead of one person, imagine the collective mind of 6 billion people on this planet day in, day out, generating psychokinetic energy in the form of thought, intention, attention, and emotion.
Yes. Yes.
That's tremendous energy. And the we have seen tremendous signs of this energy manifesting. I think we exist in a psychokinetic universe. I've long thought this. And this phenomenon is partly to reveal that to us, to teach us that. You know, we're in this time with many things happening, historic things happening in our skies, on the ground, in the cosmos. And I think that this is part of one of those revelatory things for human consciousness, to realize our collective energy potential
and tried to channel it toward more positive ends.
Well, I agree with you both on that. And I'll tell you what, we're going to end the interview at this point, and I'm going to say thank you both very, very much. Hopefully, we can do another interview short of this hum that we've got with us. And we'll schedule another date and do yet another interview with you. And I would like to get a collection of the MPEGs that you've got and actually get those up on the website. That'll take a little work, but it's going to be worth it, okay?
Thank you. We'd love to.
Thank you so
love
much.
To come back. The images that we've posted on the pages, you know, we can keep, and we can always come back to them and talk more, because there's a lot we didn't say about some of the more impressive psychic photography images we have.
All right. All right. We'll do that. So for now, Ed and Chris Sherwood, thank you very, very much for being here. And
Thank you very much.
Yes. Good night. Good night. And next time we do this, we're going to actually put the MPEGs up there for you. When we get back in a moment, anything you want, open lines. Indeed, here I am. You know, I've got a comment about Ed and Chris Sherwood, and they totally denied this, but based on what they've said, and it's not just Ed and Chris, it's many others that have sat out in the woods, sat on top of apartment buildings, sat in various places and shined lights, sat and done consciousness work, actually willing these things to appear. I'm not at all convinced that they are not manifesting these things themselves. Now, that's not to say that I'm right, because I could be as wrong as wrong can be. But so many people who want to see these things, who consciously spend time projecting thoughts for them to appear, do seem to see them, and then beyond that, even photograph them. So they are something. It's just that I'm leaning toward thinking they're manifestations of the consciousness of those projecting the intent. That's just my feeling. And again, I could be completely wrong. In a moment, we'll turn to open lines. Anything you want to talk about is fair game. All right, off to the races we go. Open lines, here it comes. First time caller line, John in Michigan. You're on the air.
Hi, Art. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Howdy.
I have a little ghost story for you.
Oh, we usually reserve those for ghost to ghost, but if it's a good one.
Well, it's kind of hard to get a hold of you. I've been trying since like 2001. And,
oh, my God. Okay.
I'm just... it starts out where I did security back then with a bunch of people, and we toured this two-story old factory that I used to work in, and it got hit by lightning and had some holes in the floor. Well, the company wanted us to do security into this business, and it was very unsafe, so I brought my camera one night, and I took a picture of these holes in the floor,
mm-hmm.
and I got the film developed. And I have a hazy white streak coming out of the hole that starts out real thin and ends heavy. And this camera always took perfect pictures. I never had a problem with it. There was nothing in the way of this hole. It was just in the floor and dark and It just looks like an apparition coming out of the hole. And I've taken it to photographers and stuff, and they can't explain the misty type apparition, it kind of bows out of the hole too. It's not it's not a straight shot.
All right, well, send me a copy.
Okay.
All right. I'm Art Bell at mindspring.com or artbell@aol.com, and I'd love to see it. Although it sounds kind of like, you know, one of those photographs, people kind of like the Sherwood's early photographs. And I would still urge you all to go up and look at those and see if you agree or disagree with me. But then be sure to go over to their website and take a look at the motion videos. Now, taking a single photograph from a television screen is a bad idea. You know, it's going to be fuzzy enough in the video where it's fairly impressive because you can see the movement. But then to take a still photograph of that, usually not a good idea. West of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Oh, hello. Did you say West? I missed a word.
I did, yes. Heather.
Yes, hello. I'm just going to get right into my question here, not to be rude and not ask you how you're doing like everyone else, but I guess everyone else already asked. I was wondering if you could provide some additional information about an object that you said had crashed in Iran.
Not yet. I've got the story. It says an object crashed in Iran, but of course we don't get that much news out of Iran. I'll see what I can do. Go to Whitley Strieber's Unknown Country. He's got a story on it. In the meantime, Heather, let me read you what I do have. It's an update. There are preliminary reports of a possible huge explosion in the Iranian desert. Last week, we reported on a dramatic UFO incident in South Africa involving an apparent meteor crash with a very unusual sound associated with it. Now, another crash has taken place, this time in Iran. Authorities do not believe the object that crashed was an aircraft. Iran News reports the object was glowing brightly as it crashed into the Berez Mountains in central Iran on Wednesday morning. The object was observed to be on fire as it crashed and was emitting thick smoke. Similar incidents have been reported all over Iran for the past year, and many officials believe that they may be U.S. espionage devices. As in South Africa, there's been no report of any official effort to find the debris. However, the rash of such reports that we're receiving from around the world suggests that either unusual craft are crashing or there are incoming meteors that are not part of any known meteor event. So there you have it. That's all we have right now. As I get more, you will get it. Gerald in Frisco, Texas, you're on the air.
Hello, Art.
Hi.
I think you're right about plants. I think they will grow to please you and do things for you.
Mm-hmm.
I've been watching plants very carefully for a long time now, and I have developed some devices that you can use to observe the plant's response to you.
Oh?
One of them I've developed, anyone with modest skills could build for about $25, get the Baxter effect, notice when you admire plants, how plants respond to you. When you water a plant, you can get the plant's response to watering it. And it's just a joy to use.
Well, what is it?
Well, I haven't really named it yet. I'm going to release it in about March. First, I'll come out with a paper that will pick up where the secret life of plants left off. Talk about what happened between the 70s and now, and then I'll come out with how to build this device. What do you think we should call it?
I have no idea. You haven't really told me about it yet.
Okay. It has either a sound output or a visible output. You could hook it up to a plant, and then if you think about burning a leaf,
mm-hmm.
and the plant is sincerely threatened, then there would be this audible output or a visual output that would show that the plant was threatened. Or if you hook it up to your favorite house plant, when you walk into the room and it senses that you're in the area, it will respond, and you'll see that response by the light coming on or by hearing the sound.
Okay, it sounds kind of like some sort of biofeedback device, frankly. Something that would emit a sound or a light, something ultra-sensitive that would, I'm not sure what it would read, as far as the plan is concerned. And so what to call it? Let me give it some thought. I'm sure I can come up with something. Reaching out to...
I stand insulted.
Yeah, you're always insulted.
Yes, Mr. Jones.
Your entire life is an insultation.
Well, you had that man on earlier that was claiming to be one of my disciples, was not one of my disciples. He was a liar, a Canadian operative, and he was just trying to discredit me. Let me tell you that all of my disciples are well and accounted for, except for Edna, who has been taken away from me by pornography. And that people were talking about talking to plants. That sounds
actually,
to me like
I thought it was a motorcycle that took her away.
That's right. That's right, a dirty, filthy, flea-bitten biker, mongrel, no good, that was part of your, it was all part of your...
You know, JC, she's got a website, you know.
It's not really her. That would not be her. I wouldn't believe that she would go on the filthy internet and try to solicit more people to have relations with.
I just don't believe it, JC, because it sounds just like her. I got all kinds of email from Edna years ago, and it sounds just like Edna.
It's not her. I'm telling you right now, it is not Edna.
Well, if Edna would get on a motorcycle and go biking away with somebody, why wouldn't she put up a website and brag about it?
I refuse to believe such insultation, and I am insulted that you would even insinuate such things that she's on the internet soliciting herself to other people. Now, listen, you've got people on here talking about talking to plants and all kinds of things like that.
Wait a minute. What's the matter with talking to a plant?
Because, well, first they're going to talk to it, they're probably smoking it. It's called Reaper Madness. A bunch of druggies is what you've got on here. And I'm going to tell you another thing, too. I've got my eye on your friend Tess Gretson and her new satanic book.
Tess Gretson.
Yes, Tess Gretson. She is a demonetizer.
She is.
Yes,
she's one hell of an author, I'll tell you.
She's the female version of Art Bell, and I'm warning you not to have her back on there because that just drives my blood pressure through the roof. And another thing.
I would love to have her back on. You know, she actually took the trouble to take her latest book, autograph it for me, and send it all the way to the Philippines.
I'm sure she did. I'm sure she did. You know why? You ought to just burn that thing.
Really?
Yes, Mr. Bell. And if I do not feel so well tonight because I was attacked by a cat.
Really?
Yes, I walked out of my house and the
proving once again that felines have great taste.
Well, this is the cat I've been chasing for weeks and weeks and weeks, and he just attacked me and scratched the heck out of my back of my neck. It's all bleeding, and this is the cat I've been after for months. And I tell you what, I went down to my basement, I got my Tommy gun, and I'm spraying the bushes for it every time I hear a noise.
You're cutting up the bushes with an automatic weapon for a cat?
Yes.
Oh, JC.
I've got clamp traps out all over the place looking for it, because we all know cats are harbingers of the devil, and cats are demons.
Why were you chasing it?
I've been chasing this one because it's one that you sent after me.
Well,
it's part of your satanic legion of cats.
There is intent, and if intent could have put a cat on your back, I guess
right
I did.
It jumped off the roof. I heard it screeching. I turned around, and there it was, tearing me up, shredding me up like a paper shredder.
All right, JC. Listen, JC. One of these days, I'm going to do what I did before. I'm going to have you on and let the audience talk to you. I really enjoy doing that. They enjoy doing that.
I would welcome the chance to minister to your filthy listeners. All your listeners are going to hell.
You think so?
Yes.
You're one of my listeners, JC. I doubt you miss a word.
Excuse me, sir.
I doubt you miss a word.
I have to listen and pray against you. And the fact that you snuck back into the country, you're right. It was worthy of a military maneuver. I'll give you the day. You won the day that day. Sneaking back across the border like that.
Sneaking
against my wishes.
The border.
Yes.
Came in utterly legally. I hate to disappoint you.
No, sir. Once you left, you left and renounced the United States.
No, I didn't.
Yes, you did.
I would never renounce the United States. Communists. Communists.
Yes, communists in China. Philippines, we all know, is run by China.
Philippines is run by China.
That's right.
JC, you need some sort of geologic and political education as well.
Excuse me, sir.
I'm sorry for you, buddy.
Are you insinuating that I am stupid?
It's clear why Edna left you. And I wouldn't use that word, but I wouldn't stop you from using it.
Well, Mr. Bell, I've never been so insulted by you in my entire life as I stand tonight. You sent a tech cat after me, and now you're insulting
that
my
would
intelligence.
Be insulted, buddy. Later. You know, I'm asked a lot of times if JC is real, and he is. He is real. I've had private emails from JC. I've had private emails from Edna over the years. And I know it's difficult to envision that anybody like that really does exist on the face of the earth and makes it through more than a week with that kind of blood pressure. But apparently he does. Let's go to the wild card line and say hello in Alberta, Canada. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi there, Art. How are you?
Hi. I'm all right, sir.
Yeah, you got me following JC there. He knows insulcated is not a word, right?
I'm not certain of that.
Anyways, I don't want to talk about that. I have an interesting theory about the formation of the moon.
Oh,
actually,
okay.
I believe that the moon was created at the same time that, or the same event that brought life to Earth, actually.
Well, that's entirely possible. Are you referring to the original act of creation, or what?
No, nothing like that. No, it's very, actually, are you aware of the current theory of the moon, formation of the moon, the giant impactor theory?
Well, yes, it's something giant crashed into Earth, and a big chunk of Earth became the moon.
Yeah, something like that, but more, it is a giant impactor theory, but it's more the composition of the impactor. You see, if you were to take all of the water on the Earth, including the ice and everything in the ocean, all the fresh water, and make a big ball of it out in space,
yes,
it would be about, it would, I believe that's 1.5 cubic kilometers of water. It would create a sphere about 900 miles big.
So, in other words, you think something slammed into the Earth, creating, creating, for example, what are today the oceans of the world. It may have been a different geographic lineup that long ago. Crashed into the Earth, and a big chunk came out, became the moon, and there was a hole there, and that eventually filled with water. As good a theory as any. East of the Rockies in St. Paul. You're on the air, Carolyn.
Oh, thank you. I was earlier in the program, they mentioned group meditation worldwide to heal
yes.
Earth.
That's right.
And I was wondering what time on Sunday that was.
Well, they're, of course, gone now, but I would imagine their website would explain all of that, Carolyn.
I don't have that type of push-button stuff. But
push-button stuff? You mean computers?
Yeah. Sorry to call it just push-button. Well, anyway.
Well, I'd say, give it a try on Sunday, and I'm sure it'll probably work. Well,
I figured I could always meditate from 8 o'clock morning till off and on during the day and may catch the time.
There
Thank
you go.
Thank you very much, sir.
You're very welcome. Take care. And I would think there's probably nothing wrong with some meditation on trying to heal Earth. I would hesitate to call some great group to bear on all of that right now, but there may come a day when I will do exactly that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air. Diane.
Hi, this is really exciting. I just wanted to tell you and thank you for everything you do. My one comment is that I think our collective consciousness that you talk about is so important, especially when so many folks are concentrating on Armageddon. I really think that it's possible to bring something like that about if you concentrate on it long enough with enough people. And then my question to you is I was wondering if you've been following the story of the avian flu that hit the chickens in Texas. I was reading something online. I typed in dying birds, Texas, on Yahoo, and it said in Sulphur Springs, 24,000 chickens had to be destroyed because of the avian flu. And I'm just wondering if you've heard about that.
I have not yet, but I will certainly look into it.
Okay. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you very much, and take care.
You
too. Boy, I had some echo on that, really serious echo. You may not be able to hear it out there, and I hope that you cannot. Greg in Arizona, you're on the air.
All right. Welcome back to the Kingdom of Nye.
Thank you.
Basically, I'm around the corner from you over here in northern Arizona. Back in 97, we had the Phoenix Lights. My wife and I would say a couple of days prior to all the hoopla, we were living here in Meadview. She woke me up to that, the sound that goes through your body, and the actual ship took. I woke up, looked out the window. Sure enough, I just had to let somebody know that has some input to the outside world that they are out there. And I think Chicago might have a little enlightenment to it, along with the folks that you just had on about the crop circles. There's got to be at least 15% of them that are real.
You've got to wonder. I wonder if you wonder if some of this is being manifested by the researchers that are looking for it.
Yes, I would say yes. No, that's a great thought. You know, you got to sit and contemplate that after everything we've been through in our lifetime. Absolutely.
All right, Greg. Thank you very much. I think so, too. We've done so much lately on consciousness, intent, and all the rest of it. And when you get folks like we just had on the air who sit and meditate trying to cause these things to appear in the sky, then see them, and to be fair, photograph them as well, then you've got to wonder if possibly they're not the ones producing the apparitions. We'll be right back. JC, if you're out there, meow. Makes me think of my cats on their way back on the 18th. Boy, we can't wait to see their furry little faces again. We will be right back. All right, back to the you name it, we'll talk about it line. First time caller line, Stephen, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. I've been listening to you for quite a few years, first time I've called.
Yes,
I want
sir.
To talk about hypnosis. In the process of hypnosis, I remember listening to Dr. David Jacobs on December 15th in Andruffel last night, and how they're able to get people to recall different events by putting them under hypnosis. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if you've ever done a show about hypnosis. Cause,
I certainly have, yes.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I have a lot of questions about it. I've been under hypnosis myself and to stop smoking. But
did it work?
It did. It sure did. And it just, you know, I find the cigarettes, you know, I still think of them in a positive way, but I also think of them in a very negative way for some reason. And you know, I still had to fight it. I still get cravings, but it did work. But anyway, you know, I don't know. I think hypnosis causes people to imagine and fantasize rather than.
There's a great debate about that.
Yeah.
That, you know, the line and the way the line of questioning by the hypnotist is laid out can lead a person down a road of fantasy.
Right.
So they've got to be very careful. So a lot of it, I think, depends on the hypnotist.
I see. Right. Right, because I mean, I remember being in kind of like a dreamlike state, and where I was just, you know.
Well, if I had you in a suggestive state,
right,
and I said something like, "Did you see a craft?" and perhaps you came to me because you did see something,
right.
You would say yes, and then I could kind of lead you from there, and suggest to you that you had been taken aboard that craft, and you might go along with it and say, "Well, yes, I was." And do you remember the creatures? Yes. Do you remember what they look like? Well, at that point, your mind takes over and begins to construct what it thinks the hypnotist wants to hear.
Right, right.
So?
Right, exactly. And I don't know, but even coming in with kind of preconceived notions, you know, coming into the session might cause you to draw on those notions and then kind of, you know, just take off from there.
It might.
Yeah, I wonder. I don't know.
I don't know either, but it's been a very, very long controversy ever since we've had hypnosis available. That's been a question. And, of course, there was this big deal of, you know, a lot of children who thought they were molested and they were hypnotically taken back. And, you know, they described the molestation and all the rest of it. And a lot of that proved to be untrue. So there's a lot to ask about that. Christopher in Brighton, Massachusetts, you're on the air.
How you doing, Art?
Okay.
You had a guest, and it was months ago, I don't know how long ago, and he remote viewed the Antichrist.
Well, I had Ed Dames, who remote viewed Lucifer.
Okay. This person basically went through the day-to-day operations of this person who was the Antichrist, and it was pretty mundane things. And he actually knew that I wouldn't remember his name. He thought that I thought he would be Ed Dames.
Was it Ed Dames?
I don't know. But basically,
okay, well, all I can tell you, sir, is that I, in fact, interviewed Ed Dames, and he had remote viewed Lucifer, and it is my considered opinion that Ed has never been the same since. I know he would argue with that, but that's simply my opinion. Wildcard Line, you're on the air. Barb in Ontario.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
I have an interesting kind of story for you. You've heard of spontaneous human combustion?
Oh, yes.
I have a story of spontaneous chair combustion. It was the strangest thing. It was a few years back. I bought this chair at a yard sale, and it was like an outdoor chair. You know, like a bamboo wicker chair, and it has like a high back?
Sure.
It was a chair like that, and the only thing that was wrong with it was the arm was a little broke, so I used branches, and I wove it in, and then I used twist ties to hold it in, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then
sure.
What I did is I painted the chair all in white oil paint after. And it was really beautiful. And we had it all summer. And then in the fall time, my husband and I came back. I forget where we went. And the chair was gone. And I said to my husband, well, holy geez, someone stole our chair. And then we looked around the yard. And then my husband goes, honey, nobody stole the chair. And I says, well, what do you mean? And he was standing at his feet was our chair. There was absolutely no wood left. It was just a pile of ash, but it was in a perfect circle. And on top of the circle, it looked like someone took all of the white paint, scraped it, because it wasn't melted, it was chipped. And it's like they took the white paint after it was completely ashed and just sprinkled it on top of the ashes. And all of the little twist ties that I had were just sitting on top. It was
Barb, that's really weird.
Oh, it was freaky. So we didn't know if there was like, you know, like in our minds we're thinking, okay, it's maybe someone caused a fire, right? So we called the police, and they came in, and the cop was so, like, he was funny. He was laughing. He says, I've never seen anything like that in my life. He says, that definitely wasn't a fire. He said it was the weirdest thing. And what's kind of funny is that night, like, we couldn't sleep that night because our cat had just died, like, 2 days ago, and I was really saddened at it. So we were up all night till 7 in the morning, and we live on top of a cliff pretty well, like, right on the very top of a hill.
Sure.
And it was fall, so all the leaves were all dry, you know what I mean? And the winds that night must have been about 60 miles per hour. So if there was a fire that night, first of all, like our chair was kind of in front of our living room window, we would have seen a glow or a flame or something.
Sure.
And then the other thing was, being so windy, you think if there was a fire, it would have just flew away. And it had been kind of situated under a tree, and there was not one burnt leaf, nothing. It was so freaky. And to this day, we still scratch our heads about it. But, I mean, there was not one piece of wood left. It was a complete circle of ash.
You know what you got to wonder, Barb?
Weird.
You know what you got to wonder? You know what you've got to wonder, Barb? If you had been sitting in the chair.
Yeah, really, yeah.
Would you be part of the ashes?
My husband just said he loves you.
Yeah, I heard that. Thank you both very much. And you do have to wonder about that. We don't know what causes spontaneous human combustion. I never really considered the possibility that it was the chair. West of the Rockies, Chad, you're on the air in Arizona.
Yes, sir. George Norrie had Stephen Quayle on a couple nights ago, and they were talking about the smell in New York City. And one of the things they discussed was the possibility of pockets of methane gas coming out of the Atlantic Ocean. And they discussed that this phenomenon was occurring worldwide, so to speak. And I was under the impression that the smell you get with natural gas or methane is a chemical additive so that you can detect it because it's supposed to be an odorless gas. And
No. The gas, natural gas, or propane, for example, has an added smell. And the gas you get for your stove has an added smell. So that if there's a leak, you can find it. Methane would smell awful. You would know. You'd know methane, believe me.
Oh, yeah. They had said that natural gas and methane was the same thing, basically, but they didn't clarify that point.
Or maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I know they add a smell to gas that consumers use, you know, so that you'll understand that you're in danger. Now, maybe methane doesn't have a particular smell to it. I thought it did, but maybe you're right, because there was this situation in, I think it was Africa, I can't remember where it was, where a lake emitted a bunch of methane gas and killed virtually a whole village, and I guess there was no odor attached to it.
Well, I was kind of thinking along what you were saying, just about maybe there might be some subtle difference between methane gas and natural gas, and there might be an odor. Maybe sometimes there is, maybe sometimes there isn't, but I'm not no expert on it, so I was just wondering if you had an opinion about it. So thank you.
Okay, you're very welcome. Well, my opinion would be that there is some danger, that there's a lot of methane that's trapped on the ocean floor. And with the changes that are going on, I would not be surprised if we were to hear about a sudden methane release. It's not something they like to talk about because it's extremely dangerous. East of the Rockies, you're on the air.
Hey, Art, this is John from Springfield, Illinois.
Hey there.
I got a shortwave question for you. My mom went to an auction and bought some radios. One of these has a shortwave band on it. I'm getting some really weird sounds. Can I let you listen to something and see what you think of it?
Okay.
What you think it is?
Sure.
I don't want it to be too loud here. Can you hear that, Art?
I do.
It's on the shortwave band at right around 6.2, it looks like.
I'm not at all sure what I'm hearing there. I thought I heard CW. That's code for
is that
a moment.
Is that code? Or is it?
Yeah, some of it is, but I think...
Sorry. Sorry about that.
I think that's all right. No, it might be digital. You might be hearing some kind of digital signal.
Well, a listener called in probably about a month ago, was saying something about the old AM radios. There was like a Morse code that he used to hear. There's some kind of Morse code. The screener, I let her hear it. And it's right before I went on the air with you, it quit doing it.
I'm going to guess that's a digital transmission of some sort. And that's just a guess.
And when you do your shortwave, do you usually have like a certain number that you're on when you do it on your ham radio?
And we're going to pick a new one pretty soon. I'll let you know about that. I'm not currently on the air. I've got to get my equipment going.
You know what? Maybe you came back for a reason, Art, because, you know, the power went off, and then you led the whole valley.
Thanks, are you Art. Here?
Yes.
Where are you?
I'm in Springfield. Oh, I'm in the middle of an ice storm in Springfield here.
Oh, okay.
About an inch of ice going on. Thanks, Art.
You're very welcome, and take care. It's weird weather. I don't care what anybody says. We are having profoundly disturbing weather around the country, and part of it is here. Wildcard Line, you're on the air, Drew.
Hi, Art.
Hi.
Glad you're back.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you've ever heard about this. I think our junk DNA is remnants of our own that have been unplugged by the Anunnaki to better control us. Now, there's a scientific theory out there called the Cataclysmic Continental Drift Theory, which replaces the Pangaea theory, and that 250 million years ago, we were hit by a large planet, and it mutated the, you know, split in half. Earth is ancient Sumerian for the cleaved one, and we were split in half, and the core material, radioactive core material, mutated us and changed our DNA, and you know, our DNA is healing, I think, and the junk DNA is actually foundations for potential other helixes, like a third or fourth or fifth strain of helixes.
Well, that's as good a theory as any, or you could have a theory that so-called junk DNA is DNA that is yet to come into use. In other words, as we evolve, that DNA may switch on and give us abilities we don't now have.
Right.
Who knows? Okay, appreciate the call. Thank you very much. Intriguing junk DNA. Jim, in Lakewood, Ohio, you're on the air.
Hi, Art. You know what? You're with JC. I want JC to understand that Jack Kevorkian recently got paroled, and if there's a medical consult, that's the way to go. But anyway, my thing about cats, about, you know, you have cats, I have, I've always had cats, and the ancient Egyptians used to evacuate cats out of a burning house before women and children, because they idolized them. They used to shave their eyebrows during the period of mourning when a cat died. And I feel like that. I have a condition called mitral valve prolapse where my heart palpitates sometimes. Right. My little cat used to lay on my chest and make me feel better than any medicine I've ever had. That purring that cats have, they've looked for years as to why the purring has a certain sound to it.
Actually, they have no idea, sir, why cats purr.
I know, that's why. And you know what? I believe me, Art, I know. When that cat lay, because she was 21 years old when she died, but when she laid on my chest and worked better than any medicine that I ever had for my condition. She would purr, and that is sort of like, we'll call it an ultrasonic feeling. It made me feel like a real person.
Actually, sir, I think there's science to back that up. I believe there is actual science to back that up. Now, when you pet a cat or a dog, or you allow a cat to purr with you, it has a healing effect. And then, of course, you mentioned, I believe, the Egyptians. Well, there's a saying that the Egyptians once worshipped cats, and cats have never forgotten that. West of the Rockies, you're on the air, Larry.
Yes, Art.
Yes, sir.
First time I ever talk with you, I'm sure glad I got the chance to. And I've been studying astronomy since, what, the 50s, and seeing my share of UFOs, but that's not the question I want to ask. Mars, that fascinates me, of course. And this is my theory, it's just a theory, me and this other guy. I think there's life in the caverns of Mars. I think that's where the life's going to be found. I think it's going to be found in, there's going to be water underneath there, because the surface, of course, is very hostile.
Well, a lot of people agree with you. If there is going to be life on Mars found, it's going to be found beneath the surface.
Yeah, and I'd also, a friend of mine knew somebody that worked for, I think it's in Pasadena, wherever they make the Mars landers. And he thinks what he heard is kind of bizarre, that they already found fossils on Mars. I don't know if you ever heard about that, but they already found like brachiopods and gastropods and plesiopods and stuff like that. They're keeping it hushed up.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me. I've said this for a long time. It would be so disturbing, even if it was fossils, it is my opinion that it would so disturb so many people on so many levels that they simply would not release it right away, or perhaps ever. First time caller line, James in Auburn, New York. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Love your program.
Thank you.
I was wondering if you were aware of a UFO being on the movie Jaws?
No.
Well, it's there.
And during what part? Because I've got a copy.
Well, good. Our driver is on top of the boat, and it's kind of like dark. And he's looking through this thing that he brought, a bag or something for a gun.
Right, right.
And you have to watch very quickly, because it's just a red streak behind his head. And it's coming down about a 30-degree angle. What I did was I was watching it, and it was a VHS tape. And when I was taping it, I noticed it. And I said, what the heck is that, you know? So I rewound it, and I hit the pause button, the pause stay button.
Right.
And I jogged it. I jogged it back across the screen, frame by frame.
Right.
And I was able to see in front of the streak a white light. And it went all the way across the screen, down behind his head, and then went out of the focus. I went out of the picture. But I continued to watch, and as you look, they kind of panned back with the movie that they were taking, and the boat was just bobbing in the water. And if you look over to the left, you can see, which I think, it came back around and went into the clouds up on the left-hand side.
Okay, how far into the movie is that?
Well, maybe halfway.
One and a half, okay. I will go take a look.
It's before the shark started banging in the bottom to make it sink.
Got it. All right. I promise you I'll take a look. I've got to go because the show is over. And this is Crystal. What a voice. All right, everybody. That's it. See you next weekend. Everybody have a good week ahead. From the high desert, good night.